Our scripture reading today is from the book of Matthew, chapter 9, verses 9 through 13. As Jesus went on from there, he saw a man named Matthew sitting at the tax collector's booth. "Follow me," he told him, and Matthew got up and followed him. While Jesus was having dinner at Matthew's house, many tax collectors and sinners came and ate with him and his disciples. When the Pharisees saw this, they asked his disciples, "Why does your teacher eat with tax collectors and sinners?" On hearing this, Jesus said, "It is not the healthy who need a doctor, but the sick. Go and learn what this means. I desire mercy, not sacrifice. For I have not come to call the righteous, but sinners." The word of God for the people of God.
So we're starting a new sermon series today called I Quit. We had a banner down below, and the first banner we put out down in front of the church, it just said I Quit, and it kind of looked like we were shutting the church down, so we decided that was a bad idea. Maybe we should have a different banner, so we filled out what the sermon series was about, and then we got a call. Somebody said, "Wow, if that's what you're talking about, I'd like to come," and so I'm really glad that you all are all here, and I pray this will be a blessing to you, and I'd be so grateful if you'd pray for me as we begin. Lord, bless the words of my mouth and the meditation of our hearts, and I pray that these things will not only be acceptable to you, but will be helpful in our discipleship. Help us be the people you want us to be, and help us to be the Christ followers that we long to be. In this I pray in Jesus' name. Amen. Woman arrives home at 6:30 in the evening. She's had a long day. She sees her husband's car in the driveway, and down at the end of the driveway, she also sees two trash cans that were put out last night and emptied that morning and still haven't been brought up. And she mutters to herself as she parks the car, "You can't even remember to bring up the trash cans." In the words of Brené Brown, who's a sociologist, she begins to write a story in her head about the trash cans, about what did and didn't happen with the trash cans. And she's making some assumptions. She says to herself, she thinks, "My husband is a really nice guy, but he is not overly thoughtful. He has to be reminded of things that are his responsibility constantly. And I carry the major load in this family, and he acts like he's the only one who works hard during the day. Would it kill him to bring in the trash cans? Would it kill him to do that simple thing?" And that's what she's thinking as she grabs the doorknob and she opens the door. And when she opens the door and walks inside, she smells something, and it's so out of place, she's not even sure what it is. She just stops and she smells again and she thinks, "What on earth?" And then she realizes that is sweet potatoes. That's sweet potatoes. And then she hears a door close on the back door of the house. And then she hears a noise of footsteps, and as she enters the house further, she sees her husband, and he's walking in, and he's got a platter, and on this platter is chicken. And he looks at her, and he says, "Oh, hi, honey, how you doing? I knew this was going to be a full day for you, and I just thought, you know what, why don't I just get home and start dinner? And so I hope you're hungry." And she looks, and there's a table that's set, and he sets the platter down, and he said, "If you can just give me 5 or 10 minutes, it's all going to be ready." Do your assumptions ever get you into trouble? Do they? And the best assumptions for me are the ones I don't voice. Because I find that my assumptions often get me into trouble. And that phrase that I learned from Brené Brown on a TED Talk and in a book that she's written, "The story I'm writing in my head," I have found that's been just a huge blessing to me. Because sometimes with just a glance, we think we know exactly what's going on in the situation. In fact, there are days when I believe I have divine insight into everything, where I can walk in a room and within three seconds do an assessment. I sometimes believe I can tell you everything that's happening in that room. What is motivating people, what's happening in the moment, what people are doing and not doing. We make assumptions. And sometimes our assumptions can be really harmful, not just to ourselves, but to other people. I have a friend, his name is Justin. He's actually here in worship today. And Justin has helped write the curriculum, some of the curriculum that we've used during Lent. Justin is a very hardworking person. He's a very nice guy. I've spent hours with Justin on projects. And I can tell you, I have found him to be polite and kind. He's sort of quiet and thoughtful, but when he speaks, there's something worthy to be said. Justin is married to Brittany, who is a very nice woman. If you didn't think Justin was a nice guy, you would probably give him credit just because you know Brittany. And you think, well, if she chose him, he's probably pretty good. Now, recently, Justin was on Jeopardy, which is pretty exciting, wouldn't you agree? Like, just to get on Jeopardy, you've got to be a pretty smart guy to be on Jeopardy, a pretty smart person. And so, this is Justin on Jeopardy. This is the opening.
Is Jeopardy. Here are today's contestants. A video production specialist from Reston, Virginia, Justin Lucas.
Okay, I'm not, yeah, you thought you were going to see the whole 30 minutes, didn't you? No. No. But it'd be worthwhile. So, Justin did really well on Jeopardy. He did really well. He went into the final Jeopardy round as the leader. I was not amazed that he missed the last question. I was stunned that he got every question prior to that correct. I mean, it was really impressive, and I got to be there when it was aired, and everybody in the room was rooting for him. It was just really, really great, and it was just a really fun thing to watch. But here's what I didn't know. People watch Jeopardy, and then they tweet things. And Justin shared with me, and it's with full permission that I share this with you in case you're about to feel awkward. Because frankly, Justin, this would have been easier for me if you wouldn't have come this morning, but here we all are. But Justin said in a conversation we just had this week, he said, you know, people tweet stuff, and I was told, don't go look at it. But he said, of course I went and looked at it. I'm going to only read three of those to you. This Justin guy at hashtag Jeopardy, I just want to slap the smirk right off his face. I don't like this Justin guy. This is a new one. I don't like this Justin guy. He seems like a real jerk. I think that half smile thing he's doing is what I think it's that half smile thing he's doing. And how he answers. Hashtag Jeopardy. Must have been all those right answers that were really disturbing. Third one. Does anyone else want to smack the smug right off of Justin's face? Hashtag Jeopardy. Now, the assumption here is that by looking at Justin on a TV screen, you can know enough about his inner thought life, his inner motivations, not only to judge him, but to want to deliver a punishment for a crime you have judged. Does that make sense? And I know what you're thinking. Tom, that's not applicable. I'm not a social media troll. We all know trolls exist. We all know they're out there. And so do I think that you would ever do that? Of course I don't think you would ever misuse social media. That's not what I'm saying. What I am saying is this. Can I tell you something? I am guilty about making assumptions that fast. I really am. But you know what? We're having communion today, so it's confessional. Seriously, like part of communion is to enter into a space where I look at my life and I go, am I like Jesus? And the speed of assumptions is what's so intriguing to me, how fast I can make them. And this sense of omniscience that I feel that I have some days, that just by watching somebody on TV, just by observing something that happens lightning fast, every day, all day, people make assumptions about what's going on around them. And these assumptions are based on a set of biases that we possess. And even when we know we have them, we still possess them. These biases are on any number of issues that include things like gender, race, culture, economic status, age, relational status. That person's single. That person's married. That person has kids. That person doesn't have kids. And these biases become the filters through which we see people and situations, and then we create stories in our mind about what's happening. And I have to tell you, rarely have I worked with material that is any more convicting to me than this material on Quit Assuming. There is, you see, a correlation between judgment. There's a movement that we make. There are assumptions that we make, and assumptions quickly move to judgment, and judgments quickly move to contempt, because rarely when we make assumptions do we make the best of assumptions. Most of us have a tendency, and it's because of how sin has harmed our worldview. Sin has put these lenses up, and they're rarely positive lenses. You almost have to train yourself. In fact, I think that what Jesus does in his teaching is he's trying to retrain us to start with the best of assumptions about other people and to pull the filters out that we're looking through that maybe sometimes cloud our judgment. But it's hard because we go assumption, judgment, contempt. Almost always it leads to negative words. And it's interesting how much Jesus taught about these issues, how much Jesus talked about not judging others, how much Jesus talked about not holding contempt. There was a phrase in Jesus' day called raka, and it meant you fool. And it was a very common phrase in those days. We have phrases that are common in our day. But because Jesus was a very relevant teacher, he talked about that one phrase. He said, hey, don't even say you fool. And the reason is he was trying to move us backwards into this whole pattern. And friends, this is a lightning fast chain. Assumption, judgment, contempt, words. This whole chain is not measured in minutes. It's measured in seconds. And Jesus is trying to interfere with that pattern. And he calls us to this because it just happens so fast. You are at a traffic light. It is a car here, and your car is directly behind them. And it's red, it's stop, and then it's green. And the car is not moving. And you begin to count in your head. 1, 2, 3, 4 seconds have passed, and you can look into the rearview mirror of that car, and you can see the reflection, and it is a woman who is there. She is in the driver's seat, and she is looking down, and you get the feeling that she's holding something up. You get this feeling, and you're just like, I know exactly what's going on. She's one of the selfish people. Because yesterday, you sat through a whole light cycle across waiting, trying to move. And the person was texting, and you know that's what's going on. You know she's just texting away. And it makes you crazy. And the more you think about it, the more angry you become, because it's not just her, it's all of them. Because honestly, distracted driving is the drunk driving of our age. That's what the insurance companies are telling us now. And it just drives you crazy. This is no longer inconvenience. This is about justice. And you say that out loud. You begin to narrate what's going on and how ridiculous she is. And your passenger in your car, this passenger right here, she turns and looks at you and she says, you know, she could just be having a tough day. Well, there is an open lane of traffic right here. And you want to get through that green light. You want to make it across the intersection. And so you pop out, but you don't do it quickly. No. Because it's just the two of you. You do it slowly so that you can turn and you can look at her and maybe communicate some things as you go past. And you very slowly roll past. And she picks up on the fact that somebody is very slowly rolling past. And she looks up. And now you can actually see into her car through the window. And you see that her hands are holding nothing. They're holding nothing. And now you're like, what's this about? And you realize, and then you start to think, why do people sometimes hold their hands up here when there's no cell phone? Why would she be holding her hands up here? And then you look again, and she looks at you, and you realize her eyes are absolutely full of tears. She's got some mascara. It's starting to run a little bit. She is weeping. And you realize that these upheld hands are not holding a cell phone. They are holding her prayers. In fact, at a red light, she is praying. And now your mind, as you roll past, your mind is thinking to yourself, oh my goodness, what's going on there? Is she headed to a hospital? Did she just get an emergency call? Is she headed to a funeral home? Is she headed to her house? Did someone just break up with her? There's a whole story And you realize as you drive past, that story has nothing to do with anything you thought when you were here. Do you ever make assumptions? I have made almost every relational mess I've had to clean up in my life started with an assumption. And some of them are really important relationships, and some of them are people I didn't even know. We make assumptions, and people made them in Jesus' time. It's not a new problem. People have been making assumptions about other people for millennia. People made assumptions in Jesus' time. Nobody, for example, nobody could figure out why a rabbi like Jesus would hang out with a guy like Matthew. Jesus walked past a tax collector's booth. Think of sort of like a toll booth in a city environment or a village environment. And Matthew was in there because Matthew collected taxes from people. He worked for the Roman government. He was a sellout. He was a traitor. He was complicit with the Roman Empire, a Jewish man collecting taxes for the Romans from Gentiles. I mean, from other Jews for the Gentiles. He would not have been welcome anywhere. You would never have invited Matthew into your home doing what he did, because you know what else? He not only took the taxes for Rome, he could charge an extra percentage, and that's how he paid himself. Now, come on, if you could pay yourself by charging people an extra percentage, wouldn't that be tempting? Wouldn't that be tempting to make that percentage higher and higher and higher? Especially as your income, as your standard of living grew, you need to support that. So people like Matthew were hated in the first century in Israel. And there's Jesus. Jesus, one day, he looks in on Matthew. He knows he's a tax collector. He knows what he does. He knows all about him. But he looks in and he goes, hey, come follow me. We don't know if that's the first time Jesus spoke to him or if Jesus had been developing a relationship with him. We don't know. What we do know is Matthew left. Matthew apparently was not loving his life either. You know what? A lot of people that are caught in really bad situations don't love their life. Did you know that? No woman at 16 says, I want to grow up and be a prostitute. People in prison don't usually sit in the cell and go, what a great set of decisions I've made. And Matthew's in his own little cell. And Jesus sees something. And this is the thing about losing assumptions, is that you can see things that nobody else can see. Well, Matthew, he says, hey, before we leave town, would you mind if I would just have a party with my friends? Now, who are Matthew's friends? This is not the A-list of the village elders. Who will still talk to Matthew? Who will still have dinner with Matthew since he's been a tax collector? Other tax collectors and a group of people the Pharisees broadly call sinners. And Jesus goes to this party, and the Pharisees now don't have a question about Matthew. Now they have a question about Jesus. And what I want you to see is, I don't think this is a question of curiosity. I think this is an indictment. And here it is. When the Pharisees saw this, they asked the disciples, why does your teacher eat with tax collectors? And say, why? And they're not saying, I'm really curious. What's his strategy? What they're saying is guilt by association. If he's hanging out with tax collectors and sinners, he must be a tax collector and sinner. And you know what? We always knew, he can gather a crowd, he can do a miracle, but what's he really about? What's really going on there? And then you have to ask yourself, why do the Pharisees, and by the way, if that's a new phrase to you, a Pharisee was a religious leader in Judaism in the first century. It was a sect. S-E-C-T. It was a sect of within Judaism. They were typically religious lawyers. They were very detailed about keeping the law, the religious law. So why do they ask this question? Why do they make this indictment? Do you know what I think about me? I can't speak for the Pharisees. They can speak for me. I find that when I move from assumption to judgment to contempt to anger, I always feel worse about you and better about me. It's almost as though in my head I can stack people in a pyramid, and the more people I can say are bad, the higher I'm up in the good. Does that make sense? Again, I don't like to admit that about myself, but I think that may be a motivator when I get into this process of assumption, judgment, contempt, words. It's almost as though by saying it out loud, I am a little superior. I don't mean I feel superior, I mean I am superior. That's what it feels like. And so I think the Pharisees may have had that problem. And the beautiful thing about Jesus, and this is what he invites us to do. This is sort of the game changer. If you want to break the cycle of assumption, judgment, contempt, anger, if you want to break that cycle, here's the key. Know what your mission in life is all about. Know what you're here to do. And for Jesus, it was this. He said, on hearing this, he goes, hey, it's not the healthy who need a doctor. I'm a doctor, and the healthy don't need me. You Pharisees, you guys are great. Matthew, he's sick. So Jesus is not saying everybody's great. Don't call bad. Don't say anything bad. He's not saying that. He's saying, yeah, Matthew's a guy that needs help. But my mission here is to be with the sick. It's to help the sick become well. And then he says to the Pharisees, listen, go and learn what this means. I desire mercy, not sacrifice. Because the Pharisees were very sacrificial, but they weren't merciful. And what Jesus says to me, and maybe you, if you have the same problem that I have about assumptions, he's saying to both of us, God desires us to be merciful. And then he says, for I have come not to call, I've not come to call the righteous, but sinners. And so he knows his mission. Jesus doesn't want to judge the brokenness of the world. Jesus wants to heal the brokenness of the world. And let me ask you, have you ever been deeply grateful when you knew you had a broken, sick part of your life and you received God's mercy? I mean, have you ever felt the feeling of kneeling and finding that the cushion is padded and that God's grace meets you when you put your hand out and you receive Holy Communion and it's one of those Sundays where you're just like, nobody else knows what's going on in my life, but the Lord Almighty does. And you just like, God, forgive me. And you feel mercy. So my observation about Jesus is that there are these these three words, and I hope that's where we are in the slides. Show me the next slide. Yes, good. There are these three words, and the three words are these. And you might even write these words down, because you might just think about these words this week. Mercy. What if we were as merciful to others as Christ has been to us? Because I don't know about you, but wow, I am dependent on God's mercy. And it's not that I keep sinning so that grace can abound. It's that the healing that's happened in my life, the sanctification that's happened in my life, has all begun with God's grace. And so what I feel Jesus saying to me is, hey, can you be as gracious to others as I have been with you? And if I'm as gracious to others, this assumption thing breaks down at the beginning. Why? Because assumptions work on speed. But mercy is slow and patient. And mercy is curious. It wants to know what's going on. You know, Jesus, we just bless the teachers. You know who the best teachers are? They're the people who think about the whole child. They don't just think about the hour that the child is in the room or the day that the child's in the room. They are curious about the child. They're curious about their home life. They're curious about what their learning style is. They're curious about all these things. And they are rabidly focused on the nature of a child and what the child is experiencing in life. And so the question that you might think about is that curious teacher, who thinks about this child and learns and learns and learns, that's when the learning improves. And guess what Jesus did for a living? We forget this. You know what Jesus did for a living? He's a rabbi, he's a teacher. And he has such curiosity about people. And he wants me to have that. That's mercy. Second word, blessing. Blessing is when I don't drive through my world, I don't walk through my world, and with contempt. I realize that my mission is to bless others. You know, students, kids, teenagers especially, what if you had words of blessing for your parents? Because can I just tell you something? If you're a teenager, your life isn't the only one that's tough. Your mom and dad, wow, when you give them one kind sentence during the day, one word of appreciation, honestly, it lifts them up about 100%. Because they love you and they've been making a lot of sacrifices, but they just never feel like they're doing it quite right. That's the secret of parenting. Am I right about this? Parents, a word of encouragement to your children. An extra. A blessing. I mean, what if you walked through your whole life and you just thought, when you saw people, how can I bless people? How can I focus on people? What can I do? I mean, that would be really, really powerful. Third word. You know, I don't know what I get into. Assumption, judgment, contempt, words. Seconds. 3 seconds. When Jesus has told me my mission is love. I just love that. He just turns to the Pharisee and goes, yeah, you're right, I'm hanging out with these people. The doctor goes to the sick, not to the well. And I feel Jesus sometimes looks at me and he goes, Tom, don't you get it yet? Don't you get it? Yeah, people will drive us crazy. Yeah, people don't get it right all the time. But what if our mission was about love? What if love is what I brought into my home? What if love is what I brought into my workplace? What is love? What if love is what I brought into the traffic patterns in Northern Virginia? What if love is what I brought into the coffee shop and the restaurant? What if every server who served me experienced love? Love, love, love. When you leave today, you're going to be given this little cling, okay? And it's one of these deals that you take the back off and you put it on a mirror. It has to have something to, it doesn't have adhesive, but it'll stick to certain surfaces. And it just says, I quit. It's not like I quit church. It's not like that. This week, it's about I quit assuming. So why don't you put this up somewhere where it can be a reminder to you and me. I'm going to put it up. I quit assuming. I gave up omnipotence for September. Omniscience, that's what it is. I'm going to give up omniscience for September and just put it somewhere. But when you come to communion today, as we're going to do now, Barbara's coming now to lead us. 3 words. Can you put those 3 words back? Mercy. Same with me. Mercy. Blessing. Love. What if we quit assuming and picked up this life Jesus calls us to live?